Hi, I'm Danny Gusby, Executive Director of Fathers Resources International.
And I'm Heidi Niebuhr, President of the National Shared Parenting Association.
And we're your dynamic
divorce duo.
Welcome to Divorced Dad Weekly's Q&A Session 4, Divorced Dad Roadmap, Secrets of Holidays and Christmas Series, Part 3, How to Prepare for a Happier Holiday Next Year. So, Heidi, let's get right to the questions we have from our listeners.
All right, Danny, we've got a bunch of questions. I'll dive right in. And the first question comes from Mark. Mark says, hi, guys. I'm self-employed and separated. Her lawyer has asked for a proper evaluation. I already gave her a number, but they may not believe it is accurate. A full-blown business assessment will cost me around $6,000. If I find that the business value at the end is sort of close to what I estimated, can I ask her to pay for the estimate? How about paying half of the estimate? Is this a common practice? That's the first question. Second question, I write off part of my car, meals, internet access, even my apartment. She thinks that I need to add these items back into my income. Is that true? Thanks for all the help you've been giving us guys who have to go to court alone.
Okay. Well, I have to be the bearer of a little bit of bad news.
Okay.
Yep. Business evaluation, yeah, it's a common practice that you have to prove your values and she has to prove hers.
And you don't pay for either.
Well, it's not that it can't happen.
Okay.
Okay. But typically, no. Typically, it's up to you to pay for those things.
Okay.
All right. You know, however, if you're able to come up with a really accurate number, one of the things that you could be arguing with them is say, I'll pay for it, and so on and so forth. But if it comes out as the same number that I've told you, I may be looking to go after you for costs for that.
Ah, that's the strategy.
Well, you know, the lawyer may just laugh and say, go ahead.
Right.
And the judge may not do anything, okay?
Right.
All right?
Okay.
All right. You know, this is just part and parcel of the nasty business of divorce, unfortunately. Now, the second question had to do with imputation. And, well, I got to remind everybody, you know, I can't give legal advice, but, you know, having worked with the fathers for the last 15 years, you know, and with some of the top lawyers here in Ontario, I've been dealing with these things. Imputation is what this concept is all about. So when you're a business person, very often, as in Mark's situation, you know, there's things that you are taking out of the business account that are, you know, paying for other things, which may be quite legitimate. You know, let's say your apartment actually also is doubling as your office.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, when you've looked at it with your accountant, your accountant says, well, here's how much you can write off. The definition of income for the purposes of calculating income tax and the definition of income for the purposes of calculating child support are two very different types of definitions. Okay. So if you're getting some kind of benefit, personal benefit, so let's say your business is buying you meals, well, those are meals you're not having to buy out of your personal income. Okay. But advertising. Well, what benefit are you personally getting out of advertising? That's for the business. That's for the purposes of generating revenue. Okay. That wouldn't be imputed back in.
Right.
You know, but I would strongly suggest you're going to want to take a look at all this and have a chat with a lawyer, even if it's only for an hour, just to go through the basics of this.
Would it be helpful to talk to an accountant, too, Danny, to find out?
Well, it would be helpful to talk to an accountant to be able to separate out what's a pure business expense versus what's a mixed business personal expense versus what's a totally personal expense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's say you took the money out of your account, your business account, to go for a vacation.
Right.
You know, and while you were on vacation, you did some business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once a day you were in meetings or whatever.
Right.
Now, you may claim that it was totally business and then, you know, Mr. Revenue Canada or the IRS or, you know, the Inland Revenue in UK are probably not going to say too much about it, depending on what their, you know, tax interpretations are.
Mm-hmm.
But the lawyer is probably going to say, well, you know, part of that should go back to, you know, personal. You know, are you trying to say you didn't have any fun in Las Vegas whatsoever?
Mm.
So you just went to meetings and then you went straight to your hotel. You didn't play the slots. You didn't see any shows. You didn't anything.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right.
You know, but then you come back maybe, of course I saw the shows and of course I went to the casinos and I took a client along with me.
Mm-hmm.
And here are the pictures to prove it. You know, part of my business is wining and dining.
Yep.
That's just part of the nature of what I have to do.
Right.
Well, that may be true, but you know what? The wining and dining part, you know, we want the imputation for the chits that, you know, the cost that you spent for your meal
mm-hmm.
that you're writing off.
Right.
Okay. Do you understand? I mean, that's how nitpicky it can get.
Yeah.
Okay. When you're a business person, the level of financial disclosure is a lot higher than it is if you're an employee.
And that is partly because of the fact that there's always this belief that you're hiding money somehow,
right?
Well,
you have the ability to shovel around the cash more so than when you're just an employee. Okay?
Well, let's face it, Danny. I mean, if you have a car that you're using for business
yes.
on the weekends,
yes.
you're also going to the grocery store or
yes.
the theater or
yes.
wherever you're going.
Yes.
And you're using the same car.
Yeah.
So you do have a benefit there.
Right. So if that turns out to be 10% of what you're paying
all
out,
the usage.
Of all the usage, then 10% of that value
goes back in.
Goes back into your line 150 here in Canada. I'm not sure what it would be in the W. I think it's the W-2 in the United States.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's move on to the next question. This comes from John Doe.
Yes.
He says, I'm self-employed and she works a regular job and
right.
part of her compensation includes medical benefits.
Yes.
He says, am I required to have benefits the same as her? He says, I'm okay with splitting what is not covered, but she wants me to pay for what is left over and has not covered up to the 50% for me to get benefits.
I'm not sure if I understand cover what is left over.
Here's the thing. With any type of medical benefit, Danny, you know that 100% isn't covered.
Right.
So if you have a dental plan, for example, and your dentist bill was $100.
I got it.
You're going to get maybe $75 back
yeah.
from your coverage.
It's just the way it was phrased. I was kind of drawing a blank there for a minute.
Okay.
Yeah, I got it.
So he's saying that she has a regular job that includes benefits.
Yes.
He does not.
Right.
He works for himself and doesn't have benefits.
Okay.
And he wants to know, is he supposed to get coverage himself?
Well, typically.
And he's saying, hang on, let me finish. He's okay with splitting the part that's not covered,
right?
Okay, but she wants him to pay all of the stuff that's not covered up to 50% for me to get the benefits.
Well, it really depends on a couple of things. Are you actually a spouse? Does the plan actually allow you post-separation and divorce to remain on?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are all these things that have to be known in order to even figure out what's practical or reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then the other part of it is if it's actually going to start costing her money to have you on that,
mm-hmm.
okay, because we're no longer married, she may not want to cover that. So she's going to want your contribution. So if that's what it is, then you have to take a look at it and say, okay, what is it that I need to pay in order to remain on this thing? What kind of coverage do I get? How good is it? Can I do better, you know, by going elsewhere and getting it for myself?
Well, he wrote here that to get private benefits for himself would be really expensive. So maybe this is a compromise for him.
Well, then then that might be, it could be a good deal. You know, but you'd need to understand all those issues, and then you would need to get some legal advice on them.
Right. It really depends on so many factors here. This is a pretty difficult question to actually answer because of it.
Well, it's just not that it's difficult. It's just there's various different ways it could work out based on what, you know, all the facts are.
Right.
You know, picture that she is the one who is making the majority of income.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's making $100,000, he's been making $20.
Mm.
You know, he might have a claim for spousal support. If he was married, okay?
Right.
Right. Or, you know, if he's in the States for alimony.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that might all be figured into all this, okay? You know, so not everything is necessarily as straightforward as you would want. You would have to have a full examination of what all the facts are
mm-hmm.
in order to come up to a reasonable, you know, conclusion or game plan to reach an outcome.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
All right. We have another John Doe.
Yes.
He says, my ex-wife is delaying and refusing to comply with part of a court order.
Yes.
I have complied with all my parts of the court order.
Yes.
Part of the order for my ex is to sign over permission for me to refinance the house.
Yes.
But she's making all kinds of reasons for why she is not doing it.
Yep.
This has been going on for months. In the meantime, I have major financial hardships. Sadly, the court order does not specify a date that this has got to be done. Is there anything I can do to get her to do what she's supposed to do? Can I leverage this for more time with our children?
Okay, well, let's break this down. First of all, if it's just an endorsement and the order hasn't been issued, the first thing you would need to do is get the order issued by the court, okay? What the judge writes down is not an order in itself.
So a handwritten order is not actually a court order?
Yeah, what the judge writes at the hearing, it says, here's what I'm ordering. That in itself is not an order, okay? An order is when it's on a proper order form and it's stamped,
and it's typed.
Stamped by the court.
Typed out and stamped.
All right. So that's the first part that you have to know. Okay, so let's assume that you have a valid order then. If you have a valid order, then you're free to, you know, proceed, you know, on contempt if you want. I wouldn't necessarily suggest it initially. I would just simply put the shot across the bow. Here you go. Here's a motion. Since you're not giving me what we need to do in order to complete,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm going to bring a motion. If she's trying to hold it up or whatever, you know, you get an order that dispenses with her signature for things.
So that you can just go ahead.
Yeah, that you can deal with the property on your own.
Right.
You know, there's a various number of ways that you could deal with this, but your best bet is going to be is that in the end you're going to need to speak with a lawyer in order to be able to have them, you know, render legal advice on your situation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, I can give you sort of the general ideas to think about and in principles, but in the final analysis with these kinds of issues, you're going to want legal advice.
Well, Danny, this begs the question, because this sort of thing does come up in many different scenarios where it says something in a court order, but it doesn't specify a specific date. I mean, one other example is, you know, that you know, father is granted reasonable and agreeable access.
Right.
But then it doesn't specify that it's every other weekend and Tuesdays for dinner and Thursdays for dinner.
Right.
It just says reasonable as to be arranged by the parties. Well, you know what? Reasonable, what you think is reasonable and what your ex thinks is reasonable may be two totally different things.
That's correct.
And secondly, if it's not specific, then how do you know if you're being denied access other than, you know, no, you can't have the kids at all?
Well, this is the whole thing.
So even in a situation like this where, you know, obviously, I guess he has... it says here in his question, part of the court order is for my ex to sign over permission for me to refinance the house.
Right.
So she's obviously got to sign something
right.
to be able to allow him to refinance.
Yes.
So, you know, if you don't have a date in there saying, you know, by the end of the following month, whatever month that is.
Yep.
Then you can go back to court and say, Your Honor, this was supposed to be signed within 30 days of this court order,
right.
or by March 15th, you know, whatever, be specific. And then you can go back to court and say, well, it's March 16th, and this hasn't been signed yet.
Right.
Right? Without the specifics, it's hard to enforce it.
That's correct.
Other than having to go back to court again, which is like nobody wants to do that.
Nope.
All right. Next question comes from Russ, and Russ is in British Columbia. He says he writes here, the West Bank. He says, I know that here in BC, British Columbia, the legal system encourages out-of-court agreements between parties, but how do I convince the woman that has nothing but hatred for me and blames me solely for the breakdown of our marriage to sit down with me and work out an agreement that we can work out for both of us, regardless of her feelings for me.
I would think one of the strongest things that you could do is you could explain to her what court actually costs. You know, for people who are going to fight it out in family court to the bitter end, I mean, you can be looking over six figures.
That's true.
Yeah, easily. And that's all within a period of 18 months. Has she got that kind of money, or is she going to be standing there by herself not knowing what to do?
Well, sometimes, Danny, women and men, I mean, I don't think it's exclusive to women, don't want to hear that. And sometimes you have to actually take them to court to, you know, for them to learn the truth of what you're saying, right?
Well, then I'd suggest tell her, you know what, go sit in court for a day and find out what it's all about.
Right.
Right. She may find it a rather unsettling experience.
Would you send her examples of you know, different maybe examples of what it costs to a certain person? You could maybe find information online, or I mean, would that be helpful to send her information?
Well, sure, but the final analysis maybe is that you're going to court no matter what. You know, because if you're dealing with someone who's disagreeable and doesn't want to listen, doesn't want to talk, and just wants what they want, then sometimes the only way for them to learn is to learn the hard way.
Well, he says that, you know, his ex has nothing but hatred for him and blames him solely for the breakdown of the marriage.
Right.
I mean, how do you negotiate with someone who says, well, it's all your fault?
Well, that's going to be very, very difficult.
You know,
difficult.
I mean, that's kind of an impossible situation.
That's going to be very, very difficult. And maybe part of it is that you got to play a little bit of hardball with them in court in order to get them to, you know, be a little bit more reasonable.
Yeah. We have another John Doe. He says, in family court, he wants to know if the increase in the property value, so the capital gain, is considered income when one is realizing a benefit. He says the example is the value of the house over the last 4 years has gone up by $50,000.
Right.
Now, this begs the question, though, have you settled your property issues or not? Or are you just saying, okay, you guys have settled all your property, and now your house has gone up in value over the last 4 years? That's not income, right?
No, it's not income. No, it's a capital gain. But, again, you know, you've got to take a look. It's going to really depend on a whole host of factors. Where do you live? What jurisdiction is it? What is the law in that area?
For something like that, you really should spend an hour with a lawyer to ask that question.
But there's another part of it to consider, okay, is as a property owner generally, okay, forget that you're married, forget that you got a relationship. Two people buy a property together,
mm-hmm.
okay? If the thing increases in value, do you think party A gets to say, well, I get to keep that value? And, you know, party B, you just get back what you put in?
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that.
Right.
Right. No court's going to, you know, let that stand.
Mm-hmm.
So, last call for anybody who wants to get on live.
Okay.
Okay, by the end of the next question. If you haven't got your hand raised, that's it for getting
on
live.
That's if you want to phone in, and obviously that's not for the replay.
Yeah.
Okay. Danny, this next question comes from Joe. He says he's been separated from his ex for 10 years.
Yes.
And he says, for the past 10 years, every time I'm supposed to have my child, who's now going on 12, for an overnight or a weekend visit, he sometimes decides at the last minute he doesn't want to come. And his mom has the attitude that, well, if you don't want to go, you don't have to. And my problem is that if I go to pick him up and he still won't come, she won't let me physically take him. The only reason he won't come is because mom is a weekend alcoholic, and he fears that her safety, he feels that he has to be there to protect mommy, as he told me on several occasions, that he's had to put her to bed, and this makes me sick to my stomach when I think that a 12-year-old has to live like this and not be able to be a child. The problem, I think, is for me, is there has never been a custody battle or a court case of any kind. However, she's gone to Family Responsibility, the Child Support Enforcement Agency, for support, which I'm refusing to pay because I never see my child. And every time I tell my kids he's coming, they get excited, more like ecstatic, and then he won't come because he's afraid to leave his mom alone. A lot going on here.
Yeah.
He says, please tell me what to do. I'm going crazy.
Well, first of all, pay your child support. It's a bad mistake to be not paying the child support because mom is not sending the kid. That's not going to fly. That's not the way the law operates. And while I can't give you legal advice,
yeah, that's usually a huge mistake.
I can tell you that's a huge, huge mistake that I see happen all the time. But guys feel like it's the only leverage they've got. No, pay the child support and take her into court, okay, and do what's necessary through the court in order to get the access. But the problem is that this has been going on for years, and now he's 12 years old, okay? You know what I've been saying all the time about being proactive, be ahead of the game?
Right.
Right? You see, what's going on here, my analysis is that you're hoping against hope that if you do what you're doing, it's going to work and she's going to cave and that's going to be the end of the problem. It's not happened. It's years later.
Yeah.
Does that pretty much sum it up, you think?
Yeah. I mean, Danny, this is a bad situation, you know, what he's described
here.
Well,
I feel bad. I feel really, really bad for this child, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I feel really, really bad for the dad, too. And I even feel bad for the mom that she's an alcoholic. But in the final analysis, the two of you picked one another. She's withholding the child. You're withholding the child support. The judge is going to look at that and say, what, you're both immature.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
You know, don't use her behavior to justify yours. You should be paying her the child support. And when you got problems with this, you bring this to me and I deal with it. Okay? But the reason that you're not dealing with it is because of the cost that goes on in these things. That's
mm-hmm.
usually the number one answer. I haven't got the money or I don't want to pay the money. Okay?
Right.
Well, you know, just because the government said, okay, you have the right to divorce, didn't say that you got the right to divorce for zero.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the really sad, unfortunate part in all this. So one last question, then we're going to call it.
This is a really simple question, but it may not be that easy to answer, Danny. This comes
okay.
from Ian.
Okay.
He wants to know, what is the difference between legal custody and physical custody? What does that mean? Or do they mean the same thing?
Well, in essence, they do mean the same thing, because legal custody is the right to make decisions, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Physical custody means that this is when the child is with you, okay? But if you've got, say you've got joint legal and physical custody of a child,
mm-hmm.
okay? That implies 50-50 timeshare. If somebody has a legal custody of the child, okay, or legal physical custody,
right,
that means they have the right to
make decisions on behalf of the child.
Yeah, now unless there's something within the order that states to the contrary, okay.
So, I mean, physical custody means that's when the child is
yeah, if you have legal physical custody for the child 10% of the time, well, you know, if the child gets a nosebleed and you got to go to the hospital, well, nobody's going to question it, okay? But if you decide that you're going to enroll that kid into a monastery, you're going to have a big problem, okay?
Right. I've got a much more detailed question here from a sister, Danny. My brother got visitation every other weekend after disproving all sorts of accusations from the mom. The court awarded him costs. She says, the abuse of the courts was so blatant. What he is now asking is for a contact number for the mom in the case the child has an emergency, or in the case that she, you know, wants to speak to the mom while he's in his care. The mom ran away with the child, and it took 9 months to get this settled. Is there some right for the father to know where the child is living? The mom has deferred child support payments. Why, we don't know yet. And yet, you know, the hearing was just completed. Now all the allegations have been categorically dismissed. Can't we now just get this daughter residing with him every weekend or every other weekend?
I think you already know the answer to that, because take a look at what's going on.
Yeah, I mean...
court is a slice-by-slice process. Nothing happens fast.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Tony, this is such a difficult situation when you're dealing with... It sounds to me as though he had some criminal stuff going on and accusations that he's been cleared of. And, you know, unfortunately, it's not going to be as simple as you think. You know, there's going to be a lot of stuff. I mean, you've got past the legal, or rather the criminal stuff, and he's been completely exonerated. The next step is, you know, part of this for him, and if you're going to be helping him through this, is get yourself educated so you have a better understanding on what you're going to be dealing with.
Well, that's all the time we have for this installment of Divorce Dad Weekly.
Thanks so much for joining us. Please be sure to sign up to receive our newsletter so you'll get email reminders and updates of the future training sessions. And to get those reminders and our newsletter, please visit our main website at www.fathers-resources.com. Sign-up form is on the homepage in the top right-hand corner. Please go do that now so you won't miss any future training reminders. If you have any comments or feedback on tonight's training session, we'd love to hear from you.
So that ends our Q&A call. We wish you all success with your challenges this week. Stay strong and focused on your goals. Refuse to be baited by anyone. And remember,
the most important job you'll ever have
is to be a dad.
Thanks so much for listening.